Thank you. I'm nervous and shaky. But the main reason I'm here is to pay a little bit back what this wonderful program has given me. So I get kind of shook up when I speak. My name's Norm Walker, Danville, Kentucky. Sobriety, I'm a class of 59. Came in the program in Canada. Grew a little bit, and then I left. And I'll mention a little bit how it was when I came in the 50s. And the road that I had to take to get here, like most of us. And one thing about it, when you lose everything and you come in, you can only go one way. And I'll discuss that a little bit, the road I had to take and how it is today. And the wonderful program of AA, which is the most amazing program, whether you stay or not, that will ever touch you the rest of your life. And it still amazes me today that you can take a guy like me that lived for nothing but drinking and get sober from my first meeting. And I give all the credit to the wonderful people that was here when I walked in the door. Because I'm not here to brag what I got, because please remember that everything I have today and tonight, I got from you. I was privileged to be at the last meeting with Bill Wilson in Miami, and which was something special to me. But back in them days when I came in, I didn't have a chance. Because when you walked in the door and you were new, the wagon circled. I mean, it was bad. I had two old guys, one worked in a brewery for 12 years, some old lady, and she was like 60. By the way, I hit 90 last August. But and another guy. And I didn't have a chance. By that I mean to say, they would pull in the driveway, and they said, get in the car. They said, you're going to meeting. I get the meeting, and I'd be saying, you know, making some comments, maybe about the speaker or somebody. And she said, shut your mouth, because you don't know nothing. And then days, you know, I remember the group they tried for, it took them 2 years to get a couple of hospital beds in the local hospital, because nobody had much to do with alcoholics in them days. It was the I remember when I walked in that door, I said, man, how low can you get to go to a bunch of bums like this? I was a young, wise guy. I had all the answers. But sometimes we have no choice, you know. I didn't have a job. I didn't have nothing, so I had nowhere to go. But anyway, the meetings, you know, they were still like this. But when a new man came in, everything stopped because everybody went for the new person. There was no she and he in them days. You know, women sponsored women, men took them in. That's the way it was. But anyway, that's a little bit how it was. And one of the biggest fears that New York and the old people had in AA was outside influence and money, because they didn't want the programs to change. And looking how it was then and today, some things has changed. We have the same program, but sometimes different people. We're not all dedicated the way we used to be, you know. I remember they picked me up one time, they said, you're going on a 12-step call. And when you get there, don't say nothing because you have no message. I'll do the talking. That was it. But I learned a lot. And I learned that the people I was with, they didn't care whether you drank. That's your business. But if you wanted some help, they would be there and do anything possible for you. And that's the way it was. And 50% of everybody came in that door in them days never had another drink. 25% in and out, 25% just died. That's the way it was. So that's a little bit about how it was, and I'll go through a story. Now, I hope I don't give you a big drunk log. I'm not here for that. But I have to share a little bit about how I was almost forced to come because I had nowhere to go. But anyway, one thing about this wonderful program in Bay A, it's amazing today. If you walk in that door, most of you people, probably all of you, can tell a lady or a man exactly what's going to happen to you if you continue to drink, if you're an alcoholic. If you continue to drink like me, you will lose everything in your complete life that you love, whether it's a wife, family, job, or career. I lost, well, I'll go into that, but that's what, but, and then when you sober up, we say, take it easy, it will work out. And we tell you a little bit about the program. 12 step, 12 traditions, meetings. I was at in Canada a couple months ago, and an attorney, you know, they all have the same story. He lost his license, you know, and he's about it. So he's, and my niece knew how long I was sober, and she was talking a little bit. He said, how the hell would anybody stay sober 50 years? And I said, meetings. That's what I told him. But anyway, going back, I grew up in Michigan. 1942, I joined the Navy, regular Navy, at 17 to 21. When you're 21, you can get discharged. One of them old guys from World War II. I'm so old that I'm on the History Channel. But under Blind Man's Bluff. But anyway, I left the little town of Muskegon a little smaller than Tampa. And I arrived in New York City. The jukebox was playing. The girls were dancing. Everybody was on a party. The war was on. And I thought I just died and went to heaven. I mean, and in them days, like especially in the Navy, we all drank. That's, you know, you always hear the say, it bugs me a little today, you can go to church and some priest might say, you act like a drunken sailor. But anyway, so I arrived in New York, and everything happened to me during the war, and my life happened real fast. And so I got on a ship, and first trip to sea, and I got hit out of Bombay, India. We got torpedoed, and I was drifting around in a lifeboat for 16 days. And I got picked up by an English ship and landed in Karachi, India, which is now Pakistan. So anyway, and they had no Navy there, the old Army Air Corps. So after getting out of the hospital, went ashore and drank. And then I got on, the Army put me on a train and sent me across the desert down to Bombay. And I got on a big transport going back to the States. And there was 3,500 Italian prisoners of war on there. And I reported aboard it was a Navy transport. And I met the guy at the gangway. He said, report to the butcher shop. I said, I'm in the Navy. I'm a survivor. I don't work. He said, if you're in the Navy, you're going to work. So I went to work in a butcher shop with the prisoners. So anyway, in them days, you didn't know where you're going. And you just figured maybe you might not make it. So we landed in Melbourne, Australia. From there, through the Panama Canal, up to Boston. So my first trip to sea, get blown out of the water, went around the world. And now I'm back in New York, and I call this beautiful little girl who was 16, I was 17, madly in love, and she was pregnant by a Canadian soldier. So I said, man, you know, if there's one reason to drink, that's a good reason. But anyway, I never had too much trouble with drinking. And what amazes me to this day, you can take 50 people, all heavy drinkers in the Navy or Army, anything you want to talk about, maybe there's only 4 alcoholics out of the 50. It's what it does to you. I could never absorb that till I come to the program. But anyway, after going in front of the Survivors Board to give me 25 days to leave, and I came back to New York City, and you know, after 25 days, you know, I don't have to tell you that I got drunk. That's just normal. That's what you did. So I was hung over and broke, and I got on another ship. And like I said, you don't know where you're going. I made one of the toughest runs during the war to Murmansk, Russia. From New York to Scotland way above Norway, and dropped down to Murmansk. So I come back to New York City after that, and you're not allowed, but after one run, you can get off the ship. And so anyway, I said, well, I'm regular Navy, I'll just stay aboard. And they sent me back to the same place. So I got hit again up there, but the ship didn't sink. But I come back to New York again. They said, you know, I'm going in front of the Survivors Board. They said, what do you want to do now? I said, I want to go to Pacific. So they put me on a troop train, went to Pacific, and I ended the war in Okinawa. I was there when they dropped the bomb. So anyway, I went through all that. Still didn't have much trouble drinking, you know. I went ashore, got drunk like everybody else. So after that, I put in for submarine duty. And I made the first war patrol above Russia. This sounds funny, but it's true. It's on the History Channel. In 1949, we're on a secret patrol. And after we got out of there, they dropped their first bomb. But the reason I bring that up, there was two submarines, one blew up, and we took the crew off, and we lost 6 men, and I was in the water for a while. And I come back to New London, and I received a very high medal. From the Secretary of Treasury. So I met this young lady, beautiful lady, and I decided I probably should get married and settle down. Now we all know, if you got a problem, that nothing changes. So I asked the skipper to get married, and I married her, and we had 2 children. And anyway, the drinking picked up more and more, and I had a little trouble, so she was filing for divorce, and I ran into a lady with a lot of money. That's really what an alcoholic really needs. And I put in for another submarine to get out of New London, and he sent me to Key West. In the 1950s, we had 26 submarines in Key West, and 100 and some bars. So I left the wife there, and I went to Key West, and my routine was go to sea and then go to Gitmo or something, and I kept in good shape. I'd run around 4 or 5 miles and then come back to Key West drunk all weekend. And I would go to Household Finance, Beneficial, another one, get $300 from each one, $900 for the weekend. Pick up the phone, call her, she'd fly down, pay them all off. Wasn't a bad deal. But anyway, it got so bad for me after a couple years in Key West, I was rigging the submarine for a dive, and I got the shakes. I got scared. And I said, if I get out of here and away from all these bars and everything, I'll be okay. At that time, I had like 16 years in the Navy, up for warrant officer. And anyway, I put in for a submarine and reported aboard in Philly. And to make a long story short, I did real good. Everything was okay. And then one weekend, I got drunk with the lady with the money, and I come back late. And I went up in front of the captain, and he busted me. Right away, I lost 4 or 5 years of the Navy career. And it really bothered me. And so anyway, I had a lot of resentment, kept drinking. We'd tie up, I'd get drunk. And I was down at Kingston, Jamaica, and I was sitting on a dock drinking, and the exec come topside, and everybody else went went back on the boat, and I just stood there, finished my beer, and I walked up, and they took me to captain, they busted me again. So I was on the downslide. So one night in Norfolk, I'm now third class petty officer, and I said, to hell with it. I got on a Greyhound bus, went to New York, and got a train ticket. I went to Canada, and I stayed drunk for 56 days. And I was cleared for secret, so after 3 days in them days, the FBI has got to come after you. And my mother lived in London. I was in a different town. I never forget the words that my mother told me. I got a laugh at it today, but it wasn't funny. She wouldn't let him in the house, and she said, my son was not like that when he went in the U.S. Navy. So anyway, here I'm laying there, sick in a dog after 56 days, and everybody knew me at Western Union because a woman was sending me money every week. But I was getting sick, and I was really getting bad. And I remember this guy on the submarine that sank, that I pulled him out of the water. And he said, if there's anything I can ever do for you, give me a call. I call him at 11 o'clock at night from Canada to New London, Connecticut. And he said, can you make it back? I said, I think so. Well, he said, if you can, I'll come up and get you. I said, I'll meet you at the main gate, Marine Gate, 8 o'clock Sunday night. And I knew what I was facing. Here I am, 56 days. They can't get me for desertion because I'm going to turn myself in. And I knew I had to get well because I knew where I was going, so I had to stop and get a few drinks. I call a commander up that's waiting for me, and I said, I'll be about an hour late. It amazes me to this day, the guy waited for me on that gate. So I come in, and they turned me over to Marines, took me right to the brig. Now, a friend of mine, he was a chief torpedoman submarine sailor, he was a brig warden. And he had the ring. You know what the ring is, the Masons? And I always say the wrong thing. I still say the wrong thing. But I said, well, I went to sea for 16 years or something, and you sat on a submarine base and got a school boat, went to sea for a couple of years, and now you're back on shore duty. Man, I stood in that white line at attention for hours at a time like this, you know. But anyway, when I turned myself in after 66 days, 56, I was laying on a cement floor, sicker than a dog. They looked at me, I turned yellow all over. They took me to the doctor. They took me to an ambulance, Newport, Rhode Island. And here I am, it's still in my record, this 33-year-old young sailor or something, after my physical, is dying of cirrhosis of the liver, hepatitis, and ulcers. And I'm laying there, and my doctor, he was in reserves, and I don't think he liked the Navy. And he said, we're going to put you in front of the medical board and we're going to give you a pension. I said, wait a minute. I said, I'm late. I'm going to get a court martial. He said, I don't care about that. I got nothing to do with that. They're going to have to send you home. You're going to get a medical discharge. So I went out in front of the medical the board, three officers. Now, I lived for nothing but to be a sailor. I thought more of the Navy than my wife, believe me. And I stood in front of them people, and I said, I would like to go back and face the charge and stay in the Navy. Now, they knew I probably belonged in an out ward, right? So they did. They sent me back to New London, to the brig, same brig warden. Now I'm in there, and I remember a few years before that, I received the medal on the same base. Now I got a white uniform with a red P sweeping the streets on a submarine base, which I knew a lot of people. And so anyway, I got my court. I was still a big shot. I called a woman with the money and I said, I want a civilian lawyer. And I had a Navy defense counsel. He said, Walker, he said, you were late 56 days. You were there, either there or you weren't. You're not going to beat it. So I said, I want to get a civilian lawyer. So got a civilian lawyer. Went up in front of my court martial. I don't want to drag this out. But anyway, it's part of the story. I went up in front of the court martial. They busted me to Seaman Second Class, where I started in 1942. 6 months hard labor in Portsmouth Naval Prison. And then he says to me, you're lucky you're still in the Navy. And I just went like, I was so mad they wouldn't let me go to the mess hall with the other prisoners. They carried my food to the cell. So here I am sweeping the streets, Christmas time. And a Catholic chaplain come over to the brig. And we start talking. He said, would you like to go to church? Well, you know, you do what you have to do. So I said, yeah. So here I'm going to church on a submarine base with all my buddies in handcuffs. Okay? So I'm just keeping my mouth shut in the brig, waiting to go to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, to the naval prison for 6 months hard labor. The chaplain was on the board with the admiral of the whole submarine Atlantic fleet, which I didn't know. One afternoon he sends for me. They took me over to the little church on the base. And he said, we're going to take you out of the brig. I'm only locked up 3 weeks. He said, well, first, before that, I'm getting a little ahead of my story. They had a little box in the brig. If you write a letter, you go to the commanding officer and he reads it. So I wrote the letter and told him what I thought of the Navy and my life. And he came back, he cut my sentence to from 6 months to 3 months. I didn't have to go to Portsmouth. I could keep sweeping the streets in New London, which was not a bad deal. But anyway, after 3 weeks, the Catholic chaplain called me back down to the little church. Never forget it. He said, we're going to take you out of the brig. I said, what? He said, do me a favor. When you go back to brig, don't say nothing. I said, when? He said, tomorrow morning. He said, plus, he said, the board figures you'd have a better chance if I give you one of your rates back. So here I am, I'm out of the brig. I'm third class petty officer now. I go on down at the river, all them submarines are tied up. I walk aboard and I talk to the exec and they said, yeah, we'd like to have you aboard. So I went aboard, never took a drink for 18 days. Had it made. I was all squared away now. And a doctor sent for me and called me in. He said, we're going to take you off the submarine and put you on a submarine tender. And right away I said, after all I went through. And I said, why? He said, if you get drunk, we don't want you to die at sea. So my submarine tender is in Boston. Blows my mind. So they give me 4 days to go from New London to Boston. So I did the normal thing. I stopped and had a couple of drinks. And I walk aboard this submarine tender, I report down a torpedo room. Here's the guy, my gunnery officer, is a lieutenant now. I drank with him when he's a torpedo man in Key West. And he said, what can I do for you? I said, you can walk me to the gangway, give me 3 days off, and I want to go ashore. You know, I'm hungover. So he walked me to the gangway and gave me 3 days off. Got drunk. I called him on the phone. I said, Bob, I'm not coming back. Man, oh man, he could not believe it. He said, if you come back now, I can help you. I didn't go back. Got drunk, and I'm sitting in the bar drinking. Before I knew it, two handcuffs on me. And they took me and threw me back in the hospital. To make a long story short, they took me in front of the board. They read all my records. You know, I had a hell of a good record. And they said, we find you unfit for the Navy, and we're going to send you home, and we're going to give you an honorable discharge, administrative discharge. So I went home after 17 years with a train ticket and $25. And that was in Philly. So again, New York was my downfall. I stopped in New York and I'm drinking in a bar, and I met a guy from Saucony Oil Company. And I got all my records and I showed him, and he said, well, I'll give you a job in a minute. Just go to Coast Guard, get a ticket, and I'll give you a tanker in Portsmouth, in somewhere in Maine. I said, well, that ain't bad. So I got the letter now. So I go back to Attleboro, Mass. I never did like the town. But one thing, if you continue to go, we all know what's going to happen. Something has to happen to you. Either die or you go to jail or prison for life. That's the way it is. So I landed in this little town, and I stayed drunk for a couple months, and it came the day where this lady with all the money, she said, there's plenty of food in the refrigerator, and you're not driving my car, and there's no money. Now that's really shock. And so I was in bad shape. So anyway, to make a long story short, I got to speed up here. Something happens, so here I am, sitting in a bar, and actually, she comes in with the neighbor, so I just punched them both out. So I get the word the judge was in the Navy in World War II. I put them dress blues on, I went up in front of the man, and he said, Walker, he said, now, they're standing alongside me, they didn't look that good. And he said, what do you think your trouble is? I said, I'm having a little trouble getting adjusted to civilian life. He said, well, what are your plans? I said, I'm going to Alaska. He said, when? I said, Friday. He said, will you stay out of trouble till you leave town? I said, yes, sir. He dropped the charges. Now, it got so bad in the courtroom that he had to take the woman, the neighbor, and me in the chambers. That's how they were really shook up. So I got out of that all right, and I walked into VFW, which is a good place to drink, and I see this woman sitting there. Never met her before. I said, how would you like to go to Alaska? She said, okay. And she had a car. And I didn't know she had three kids. So here we are. We're all loading in the car, I'm drinking, I'm headed for Alaska. I stop in London, Ontario, Canada. My mother lives there, my sister, and right away, my sister said, you know, Norm, there's no work in London, you know. So anyway, I stopped, and I went down to the unemployment office there, and they treated veterans pretty good there, because the guy walked out of the office and said, any veterans? I said, yeah, U.S. Navy. Why? He said, come with me. Took me in a room, pick up the phone, got a real good job with 3M Company in London. And after just doing what I'm supposed to do all my life, working, and I made a few changes and worked real hard, and I get the word that I'm in for promotion after 4 or 5 months. Wasn't bad, so I had to celebrate. So I went back to the town where I drank in World War II. I got drunk. Now I got nowhere to go. I sent a telegram to 3M Company that the Navy called me back. So when I got back to town, I didn't have no job. The neighbors were feeding the 3 kids. So here I'm laying in bed. She called AA. 3 big guys walked in. And he said, you think, and you know, what are you going to do? I'm shaking, I'm shook over, I got no money, I got nothing. And they said, do you think you might have a drinking problem? I said, well, maybe. He said, well, we'll be back to talk to you. So they pulled in the driveway, took me to the meeting. When I went to my first meeting, I said, I've been through the Navy chaplains, I've been to doctors, now I go to a bunch of holy rollers. That's why I walked in the door, a real good attitude. And you know why I came? Because I told this woman, well, maybe I should go to make them feel good. That's the way I walked in. Never forget it. But anyway, I made a decision after the meeting. I said, well, I'll give them 30 days and do the normal thing, go down the road. After the end of the 30 days, I noticed like trees growing and green grass. I never seen any of that before. I've been all over the world, I haven't seen nothing. Like in Havana, Cuba, I never got off the cold dock. But anyway, so I noticed all this stuff and I said, you know, there might be something to this. And then this old lady that the circle, I had 3 sponsors, you know, so I didn't have a chance. She said, if you ever think you're going to take a drink, say an Our Father. And I said, you know, I've been saying Our Fathers all my life. So I get upset. We have a big argument. I'm walking. I'm going down to get a beer. I said, Our Father. Walked by the bar. Went back home. Continue to go to my meetings. Doing the normal thing. And it bothered me a little bit because this guy picking me up, he's driving a Lincoln Crown car. I don't have nothing. So he said, you might have to get a job. Oh, God, you know. And then somebody said, they don't need torpedoing on the outside. So anyway, I got a job with making hospital beds with a rivet gun, $2.40 an hour. $2.40 an hour. I used to drive a Cadillac. But I continued to go to meetings. We did a lot of traveling. They didn't have slip in them days. They just figured if you wanted to go out and get drunk, you went out and got drunk. It wasn't a slip. And God forbid if you ever come back and got sober 2 or 3 weeks after you had a slip, you better not be speaking or in the chair because they'd probably throw you out. But anyway, so I continued AA. Didn't grow much. Somebody said, where you at with the steps? I said, I took the first step and I'm an alcoholic. What more do you want? The guy said, there's a little more to it, the program than that. So I had to dig a little bit. So then another wise guy said to me, what are you going to do with your life? I said, I'm sober. What more do you want? He said, no, you need it. So he said, you probably still rate the GI Bill. I said, yeah. So I wrote a letter and got a school in Chicago. And I wasn't even sober a year. And so I got to load the kids up again. I'm not married yet. And I'm divorced, but I'm not married again. I get confused. But anyway, I landed in Chicago and it really bothered me because as soon as I left AA in London, I was real nervous and I was worried about what am I going to run into? I don't have no job or not, just a school, nowhere to live. So somebody said, put a dime in the phone for Christ's sake and go to a meeting. That's what I did. Checked into school, and it was rough. I went to school from 8 o'clock in the morning to 3:30. And I had to work, so I I got a job making saltine crackers. About $2.50 an hour now. I'm really working, making out good now. So anyway, just doing nothing that what I was supposed to do. You know, going to school, working 18 hours or something, graduated. And after graduation, I get a letter from a company in Ohio in the banking business. And so I drove to Canton, Ohio. They hired me and went back to Chicago. And I started out at the bottom of the barrel pulling wires in the bank for their alarm systems. And again, just going to meetings. My year come up, I drove 600 miles to get my chip. So anyway, after that, just doing what we're supposed to do. Guy come in, he said, how would you like to take a test, you know? We're thinking about opening up Florida. So I took the test and they said, how would you like to go to Florida? So I said, I'd like that. So packed the kids again and everything. And meantime, I got married in Chicago because this old lady again, she come down to Chicago and she said, Norm, she's got three children. You better wake up, take an inventory and get right for the woman and yourself. So I got married. Well, I got married. I thought that's what you're supposed to do, and I'm doing what AA is telling me what to do, so I did. So I landed in Tampa, and it started out with, didn't have no office, so I bought a used desk, and the company gave me a lot of authority. And so it ended up where, I had $4,000 worth of contracts on vault doors and everything. And when I retired, it was $45 million. Every year in September, I would go back to London to the same conference that I got sober. Because when I was there, I said, if I ever get a year in, I'll come back. So I went back for 25 years. I picked my 50-year chip up. But anyway, I'm in Florida now, and it's getting late, so I'll speed up. I'm in Florida now, but I still got a lot of gifts to receive from the program of AA. I still love the Navy. So anyway, I went to Washington, D.C., and in front of the board, I said, I want to go back in the reserves or something. You know, I had 17 years active duty. They said, we want no part of you. So I'm sober a few years. I fly to Washington, D.C. again. Now, I'm sober like 10 years or something. And I'm making, like I said, I'm not bragging. You guys give me it. I'm making like $150,000 a year. I got a company car, expensive. I had a real rough area in Florida and all the Caribbean. I fly to Washington, D.C. again. Go back to the office in Tampa. They call me, they said, we're gonna take you in the reserves. I said, man, when? He said, anytime you get down there. Man, I rush down the reserves. They said, what do you want? I said, I want to sign up. I signed the papers for 6 years. When I raised my hand, I got all that back pay and pension in my pension, the whole shot. I stayed in 6 years, but the Navy was real smart. They give me first class petty officer going in reserves if I pass all the exams in 18 months. I made chief in 3 years. 1985, I retired from the U.S. Navy after 43 years. In the meantime, AA, my number one shot, my sponsor was in St. Pete. I'm a big shot now. He'd call me on the phone. I didn't see you Saturday night. Hang the phone up. Man, you know where I went Saturday night. So anyway, everything turned to gold that I touched. Everything. So anyway, after working for the company 20 some years in the Navy, I figured it's time to kind of pack it up. And you know, I'm going to draw Social Security now. So anyway, then I left Tampa and I went to Kentucky and bought a horse farm and go to meetings in Kentucky, still active. And I got my Navy pension, I got my banking pension, I got my Social Security, and all the benefits. Now, it can't get any better than that. And I think of the wonderful people that helped me out. And the interesting calls, like, we never get 12-step calls anymore. But I had three that I never forget. Like, my company didn't know I was in AA, only my boss. And I had an office in West Palm Beach. I get a call and they said, we're going to fire that son of a bee. I said, well, don't do nothing. I get over there. So I fly to West Palm Beach and I call, his name was Les. I call him in. I said, you got a drinking problem? He said, maybe. I said, have you ever tried that outfit AA? He said, what? No part of that. I said, well, you're fired. You don't have to worry about a job. So I fired him. A year later, he walks in my office in Tampa, got a suit on. What the hell happened to you? He said, I'm in AA and I'm sober. He said, do you think? I said, yeah, I'll give you a new car and a job. Now, the company had a firm policy that once they fired you or you left, you did not get the job back. So I hired him, put all the paperwork in, and my boss called me and said, Norm, are you sure about this guy? I said, no, but it went through. I made a manager later at the same branch that they fired him from. In Chicago, I got a call to go to the hospital. There was a guy laying there. I wanted to talk to somebody from AA. Took the big book, walked up. I'm talking to this guy laying in bed. And he said, before you start, I happen to be a medical doctor. I said, that's all right. We all have the same problem if you're an alcoholic. Nice guy. A guy that you would love to see to come in AA and make it. Anyway, I took him to his first, I said, when you get out, call me. And I took him to his first meeting, suit and tie, I mean, dressed to the hilt. And for about a month, you know, he was doing good. He drove my yard on a weekend, and he was crying, drinking. He said, I just can't make it. His wife found him dead the next morning. When he died, he had a full page in the Sun-Times in Chicago. And another guy, when I was in Chicago, I ran into a guy that I'd take him to a meeting, you know, he's drinking. I said, now just sit there and keep quiet. And people in AA would say, what are you doing with this guy? And I said, well, he's going to a meeting and I think we'll give him a shot. When I retired, he's sober 25 years, flew down to see me. That's what this wonderful program can do for anybody. If you can take a guy like me, that I, you know how I used to, a guy said, like the psychiatrist one time said, well, what do you do? I mean, I said, I'm in the Navy, I go to sea. He said, no, what else do you do? I said, well, I go in a bar, if the lights are low, and a big blonde comes in with high heels and a black dress, and Nat King Cole was singing Rambling Rose. I said, that's what I like. Now, when you take a bum like me and get sober 57 years, don't tell me that this wonderful, amazing program cannot work for anybody. Thank you very much for what you gave me.
Thank you.
Right, there are very few occasions where I don't have some crap to say, but this is one of them. I'm